Hello, Sui. So good to see you.
Hi, Olivier. Good to see you.
Yeah, Sui, you were our roommate for 6 months. It was awesome living with you. We were so sad when you left. But you know, I'm happy that you're building your own family and your future and everything. So I'm so excited to talk to you because during our connection together, you struck me as someone who's really an empath and works with empath and really knows what empathy is. And so I'm doing this little research around like, how can we be better at empathy, giving and receiving empathy? You know, especially in people who are in a committed relationship and, you know, maybe the honeymoon phase is over and you know, we would give space to the other person to be who they are, but after a while it's not working for us anymore and we can get upset and pissed and triggered. And usually when we're triggered, what I've noticed for myself and in books that I've been reading and stuff, the man tends to want to kind of fix the situation and the woman wants connection. And if there's a trigger happening, they might even want to kind of, if they can feel what's happening for the other person as an empath, for example, they might want to either fix, change the other person's feelings, or fix the problem in the other person so that the other person does not feel that troubling feeling that they're receiving. So I'm sorry, I just forgot to ask you just a little bit of your background,
Oh, sure.
who you are, and you know what excites you.
Well, you're just passionate about the topic, so you wanted to dive right in. I feel that way too. So,
Right.
thank you. So I, for people who don't know me, I am a trained as a somatic psychotherapist. So that's a body-centered psychotherapist. I have a PhD in somatic psychotherapy. I've been in private practice with clients and healers, primarily first in Boulder and now more online and internationally. And a lot of the focus originally has been around trauma work, but that really evolved to specifically working with healers. And a lot of the healers that I work with are empaths. And so individuals who are really here to do their soul work in the world in a particular way, and who are really, I get super excited by folks who are already working in this realm of like what you're passionate about, the juiciness of the intricacy of intimacy and relationship and growth and service to the planet and all of that. So that tends to be the focus of my work. And I've also done a big training called Empath Mastery that's for empaths in particular, around how do we shift out of empathic distress, where we're actually just kind of flooded by experience and the other person, and we're not actually able to access empathy when we're in that. And this is something that's important to name. How do we shift out of that and into true service as allowing the porousness of our nervous systems and our beings to be the gift that it is? So that's a big part of what I'm passionate about and work with.
Wow, you're transmitting your passion to me right now. I'm getting jazzed about what you're passionate about. This is really great stuff. Wow. It's like already I want to learn more about what you do and you, et cetera. Let's stay on this focus. Like, for example, some people consider themselves as empath, which means they can sense what's happening in someone else. And other people, they are more like, I don't remember who called them like bricks, which means, you know, they don't relate to that. So those people, they might need more of a method, a bullet point. What should I say? What should I not say? But for empaths, like all that does not make any sense. So let's imagine, you know, like kind of the standard couple, and the man was out all day working and comes home at 6, you know, p.m. or it's tired. He's been like managing a team or maybe like doing his job, and so he comes home. Maybe he wants to relax. Maybe he's not the empath in the couple, so he wants to relax. He wants to watch the game or some TV show for like an hour before engaging with anyone, with the kids or his wife. And but the woman has been dealing with her own job, maybe kids or like what happened at school and things that is on her mind, and she needs to connect with him to remember that they are a married couple and they are a team, etc. And maybe she's in the empath in my example. I know it's kind of stereotyped, but just to give it like a start, What can you say about what it is? What does it mean to be in power? What's really going on?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple different entry points in what you've said. And so one is first recognizing there's two sets of needs. Both are valid. They're clashing in that moment. Right? Both people can get their needs met. Likely both can't get them met in the exact second because there's two different sets of impulses that both need to be honored. So that's the first thing to just acknowledge in your example. Totally valid that the partner coming home is, you know, burnt out, exhausted. They want to, it's actually this example, and then we'll get back to the empath piece and empathy. But this is more of a like, how does one regulate their own nervous system? Do they need relational regulation in that moment? Or do they need, independent regulation where they feel like they need to actually go off, tune in, get some space, regulate themselves, then they're available for connection, right? And so those are two competing needs. In this example, she wants relational regulation, like, oh, I need to feel you. I need to feel contact. I need to feel us, our togetherness, to like feel the instrument of me feeling okay. In that moment, he's like, I'm overwhelmed. I've been doing, you know, like I've been working, whatever it is. I need to wind down. He thinks he needs individual separate regulation in right. order to come together. So both of those are valid. Now I can imagine where the trigger might happen is she might get pissed of like, can I curse? I'm gonna curse. Where the fuck are you? Right?
Like,
I need contact right now and you're disappearing. And that might trigger abandonment, you know, whatever it is. He might feel imposed upon by her response to his valid need for space, right? And now you've got two people triggered. When two people are triggered at the same moment, and they're wanting different things, then you've lost the sense of we're on the same team that you're talking about. Because all of a sudden, you're the threat. The two, they are each other's threats in that example. So the pattern interrupt, it's like, okay, what can happen to like negotiate that trigger? Especially, let's call her an empath. Let's add that piece into it, right? Yeah. So let's say if she's an empath, likely she's going to have a need. She's going to come home. She's going to be tracking, and she knows her partner. She's going to be tracking, are you available, before anything comes out of his mouth, right? If he doesn't make eye contact in a particular way, if there's a tone of voice, if, you know, whatever it is that might subtly indicate that he's not available for the kind of contact, she's already on edge. The mistake that she might make on edge, feeling him not available when she wants that availability, is to go over and figure out what does she need to do to make him available so she can get her needs met. That's wow. the fixing, right? Mm. So if she leaves herself and she's anxious because she's her system's not getting the kind of contact that she needs, maybe she's also concerned, gosh, are we okay? Is our bond okay? Are we safe? Is there a secure attachment here? Because you don't feel available. It might be her personal trigger of abandonment, but it also might be a threat to the relationship. So she gets heightened. And in that heightened distress, she might go over and try to fix it or make it okay for him so that he'll show up the way that she wants him to. That pattern doesn't tend to work very well of the like, let me make it okay for you, because he's going to feel more like, I just need some freaking space. Like, just let me do my thing, right? But if he's not very skilled at being able to say, hey, this is what's going on for me. I actually just need, you know, 20 minutes of downtime. Then I'll be totally available for the kind of contact that you're needing. Then she's going to get more heightened. She's not able to say what she needs. So she skips over that. She goes over and she tries to fix him, make it okay, change something so that she'll get her needs met. He feels more imposed upon. He's gonna, you know, try to be more avoidant.
And maybe by that point, you know, is used to the situation. So already walking in the door is wondering, you know, whatever I do is
not enough.
I can't never be enough, or I can never please her.
Yeah.
And I apologize for kind of the stereotype, but I get a lot of questions also where I see people saying, you know, a woman saying, men don't know how to show up. They're not showing up. They're not present emotionally. I don't get the emotional connection that I need. And then he wants sex. And then, you know, it's like he's frustrated because he's not having enough sex. And right. I'm not, it's like I can't go there. So Yeah, how can we do any better?
Great. It's a great question. I just want to pause because I notice even in the giving of that example, I'm like putting myself in the position of the feeling the anxiety so I can feel it in my own system as I talk about it. And the first step, actually, like what I'm doing inside myself, is just to feel compassion for myself in feeling those feelings and for these two hypothetical people that aren't actually hypothetical, they're real people. Mm-hmm. And both of their needs are actually really valid. And so the first step is to, can we find compassion? Can we actually pause enough? There's this like Viktor Frankl quote about between stimulus and response, there's a pause or there's a gap. I can't remember what the exact quote is, but that's the invitation. If we can actually find that gap when we start to, both of these people are feeling anxious. She's feeling anxious that she's not going to get contact. He's feeling anxious that he's not going to get space and going to be overwhelmed by her need because he's already feeling need and pressure and all of these things, right? So the how we can do better is recognize the pattern, pause, get transparent, own our own experience, have compassion for the other person's experience, either ask for what we want or need or meet them in what they want or need. So I'll walk through all that.
Yes, yes, like awesome. Okay, let's slow it down. Get transparent about what's going on for me. How do you do that?
Well, for example, a deeper pass, like if I was the man in that situation coming home, I might notice her anxiety to connect. I might pause. I might acknowledge it. I might say, gosh, I can really feel your desire to connect. And I notice for myself, I walked in the door a little bit anxious already. So I need to own that. I walked in the door feeling a little bit anxious that I was going to be swallowed or overwhelmed by your desire.
I would like to say to that man, before you open the door, you just parked the car. Before you open the door, take a minute with yourself and check where you're at.
Yeah.
And so when you walk in the door, you can say, I'm excited. I'm tired. This is how I feel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it's great. I think that's great advice. That's the gap, right? That's the pause. It's like, okay, so I'm feeling anxious. I'm about to walk in the door. Can I pause? Can I actually just do an internal weather report? Where am I? What am I feeling? What am I feeling on a sensation level in my body in this moment? What am I feeling emotionally? What's actually happening inside this instrument that I am, right? So it's pausing there, and she can do the same thing, right? And so then when they come together, rather than reacting with their two oppositional needs, they can out themselves. He can say, wow, I'm noticing I'm feeling a little anxious. And I want to be able, so this is where the relational skill comes in, to acknowledge her need. I want, and to acknowledge, I'd like to be able to meet that need, but I actually can't right now. What I need first is a half hour of quiet, right? And then that's honoring like, oh, she gets to feel felt in that moment, like he's feeling her, but he doesn't have to give up what he needs to meet her need in that moment. He can actually honor himself. He can feel her. She gets to feel felt because he acknowledges it. And he's given her a time that he'll return, which lowers her anxiety and gives him what he needs, which is space, and also then the promise of returning.
Time frame, specific time frame. And in at the end of that half hour, check with himself again.
Yes.
Go like, am I resourced now to engage? Yes. Or do I need another 15 minutes and communicate that?
Yes. And if that's done skillfully, where she feels, and I don't mean this in a pejorative term, but handled, right? She wants to feel handled a little bit in that situation, meaning she wants to feel like her needs are valid, are welcome, are seen, are known, and are being received. It doesn't mean he has to meet those needs in that moment. And that's where the confusion is. We think, I have to give up what I need in order to meet my partner, and I'm going to die in that loss of self, right? Because it goes back to childhood. But either I do that or I have to keep my partner at bay. But there's this third thing that's an option.
Yeah.
which is the acknowledgement, the transparency, the honoring of my own experience, the naming, like, hey, I see you over there and I see you have need and I want to meet that need and I care about you, but I'm not going to be able to do it in this moment. She feels met and handled. Then there's a relaxation that gets to happen. Now, this requires a high level of self-responsibility and a high level of attunement to partner on both of their behalf.
Tell me about that. That's very clear. Thank you. Tell me about her. If you know, what does it, how does it, or my experience with impasse is that there would focus more on my feelings than that theirs. And it looks like they're not even, I mean, they seem to be voicing their own needs, but they're voicing their own needs as kind of me. How does that work?
Well, so empaths are people with highly sensitive nervous systems. It's kind of like a subset of the HSP. The HSP is the highly sensitive person. That's a term that Elaine Aron coined. She's a really great researcher in this field. And so empaths are highly trained to pick up all the signals around them. It's harder for empaths to stay in their own bodies and to be actually attending to what's happening here. They've learned often in childhood, it was like a classic training ground for an empath would be growing up in a family with addiction. Doesn't mean all empaths have empaths, wide range. I'm an empath, I didn't grow up in a family with addiction, but it's a kind of classic training ground where you have to track what's going on with dad, what mood is he going to be in, mom, what's their needs, right? You learn that this instrument is in service of the other. And so there's a way in which, in order for me to regulate my own anxiety, when, like, I'll give an example, like with my partner a couple of weeks ago, was feeling a little anxious. We're still relatively new in our relationship, and I hadn't yet really learned to trust that he can be with his own anxiety about our relationship and that that's okay. And so, and I've been in past relationships where the partner would get really dysregulated when they were anxious about our connection. And so I got nervous about that. And so what happened when he started to get anxious, I skipped over what was going on for me and went into him and was like trying to make it okay for him, which he got really annoyed about. Yeah. Thank God, which was a good thing. And he was like, what are you doing right now? I'm like, oh, right. Okay, good. You know, which then allowed me to come back eventually after we talked through it to come back to myself and go, oh, I got scared when I felt you anxious about our connection. And I thought it was my job to reassure you. Versus it's my job to stay in me, to trust the connection, to attend to even naming, wow, I notice as you're naming your anxiety, I feel a little bit scared that you're needing something from me that I can't give or whatever it is, because we're at that level where we can actually speak in that transparent language and it brings down the stress versus heightens the stress. But the empath's first response when they feel other people's anxiety or other people's anger or other people's fear or other people's sometimes even grief is, this isn't okay. It's flooding me. I'm going into what's known in research as empathic distress, which that's what I named in the beginning, which doesn't allow us actually to be compassionate. Because now we're flooded with our feeling about the other person's anxiety, and we're not even actually available to be present to what they're feeling because we can't even be present to what we're feeling. So what the empath needs to do in that moment is pause, feel themselves, right? Bring their own inner parent on board to kind of do positive self-talk to that part that's scared, right? To love themselves, to remind themselves that they're okay. Put a hand on the heart, a hand on the belly, feel the feet on the ground, touch themselves, let their eyes look around the room, all the things that kind of like settle the noise. And from that place, get curious about your partner's experience in a way that you actually can receive what's going on for them versus versus be in the I have to fix it and make it better. Oops, it got a little frozen. Did you catch that last part?
Yes, I think I did.
Okay.
So what I'm getting from you, this is like gold, is that the empath is so good at tracking somebody else, but needs a practice to know how to track themselves. It sounds like an ongoing thing to learn and grow.
Yes, exactly. I think that empaths often don't even know what's ours and what's not. What am I? They just feel distress and jump. They're because they're in a more anxious response often, or numbed out. Empaths can be so flooded that they numb out and they go to avoidant. A lot of avoidants actually are empathic underneath the avoidance. And the avoidance is a kind of protective mechanism. But the empaths are so quick to kind of be over there in response to the stimulus that they're feeling. And the invitation is, can you slow down and even just feel your own body and give compassion to yourself so that you're available for an actual curious, compassionate response to your partner's distress? Ironically, empaths end up becoming narcissistic. They're not trying to be. They feel everything, but because they're flooded with distress, then they're like, oh God, I have to make this distress better. They're not even actually able to see what is truly happening with the other person.
You know, I actually recognize myself a lot in what you're describing.
Yeah.
So the other person will say, well, you don't really feel me. I'm not seeing you empathic with me, and you're probably more of a brick. And I'm like, my problem is I'm tracking too much outside.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the other person would say, oh, you tend to be selfish or narcissistic because you're not responding to me. You're focusing on yourself. And actually, it's strangely enough, what you said just talks to me so well that I'm not here. I'm making sure, you know, it's more of the, you know, my mom was having depression when I was really young. So I had to track her. And so I recognize myself in what you described. And it's hard to know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
This is golden. So I think we're going to keep this short. Do you have any last tip you would like to give to people? Otherwise, I'm going to ask you how they can learn more with you.
Mm-hmm. Just a tip in general. I mean, I think really it's the key to everything is being willing to slow down. Being willing to slow down in those moments when we feel triggered, when our partner feels triggered, and to get curious about what's actually happening in our own bodies, right? And the sensations in our bodies and in our emotions, offering compassion to ourselves in that moment, so then we can be available for actual connection.
Because usually when we spin out, we tend to, I say spin out because this kind of an acceleration process when something is not working in the situation that's external. So it's kind of the story, it's what's happening, and we argue around what's happening. Whereas, how fast can we get out of the actual what's happening in the situation and go down into what we're feeling? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And it is a down. When we get distressed, we often go up and out, and so literally out of our crowns. And so then the invitation is like, oh, what do my feet feel like right now? What does my belly feel like right now? Where, if I'm sitting, what do my sit bones feel like in contact with the chair underneath me? That coming down helps us even know, what am I feeling in my body? And we can slow it down, and we're much more likely to have a response that's helpful from that place.
Beautiful, beautiful, Sway. So how can we learn more with you? So your training around that, your website?
Yeah, thank you. So my website is thresholdshealing.com. So thresholds with an S at the end, healing.com. Although I'm in transition, so I'm going to have a new website out soon, which is exciting. And so my info's there. The Empath Mastery course I'll likely do a version of that again in the spring. And so people can sign up as there's a place on the page to sign up as interested. And then I also do individual work so people can reach out and apply to work with me if they feel called.
Right. So the Empath Mastery, it's online, but it's live. It's not like pre-recorded.
Yeah. So if I, it's a class. It's a class. So great. Yes, it's a class.
Great. Thank you so much, Sway. That was golden.
Thank you. It's really fun to talk to you, Olivier.
Yeah. Bye. Bye.